had the example in Chaitanya Charitamrita of devotees Pundarik Vidyanidhi, for example, who was so extremely opulent that Gadadhar Pandit was astonished why it was that Lord Chaitanya sent him to see him. It looked like a totally engrossed materialist, but he was unaffected by and unattached to those things because of his total attachment to Krishna. Or Ramananda Roy, in his occupation of training young girls in the art of dramatizing Krishna Leela, he was totally unaffected by their physical contact. But that doesn't mean, aside from those exceptional personalities, that we don't need to be sense-controlled and austere. So those, but sense-control and austerity, they're counteractive, not inherently self-purifying, that's, you know, awakening causes of bhakti. But bhakti itself stands alone, so that's the idea. Bhakti itself stands alone and empowers these other things. So Prahlad's prayers are saying, I take shelter of that pure devotion. You're not attracted, you're not pacified by any material exhibition of austerity or knowledge or anything. You're attracted by pure devotion. And that can protect one, back to this thing of fear, that can protect one from this fearful condition. Then there's several, three, four, five verses, a whole other wave comes out where he's put in a very simple way, he's explaining some very deep philosophy about the position of the oneness of the Supreme Lord Nrisimhadeva, the Supreme Lord Vishnu, with all manifestations. He's bringing out a very important understanding of devotional service, the understanding that the Lord exists everywhere. Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. He starts by saying that these modes of nature which bind conditioned souls and are very difficult to overcome, practically speaking, all forms of life, Brahma down to the ant, even insignificant creatures, they're controlled by these modes of nature. And the modes of nature are completely under your control, and nature, which is but a manifestation of you, is none different than you. Another part of his prayers, he gives this, jumping ahead a bit, but he gives the example of, he describes the position of Brahma, where when Brahma was born, he was very intelligent, but he was intelligent enough to inquire, but he didn't know who he was. So his system of inquiry was, I'm seated on this lotus flower, so there must be a source of this lotus flower. So he dove into the water, and for 100 years he looked for the source of that lotus stem. Couldn't find it. So by the empiric method, he failed. And then he heard tapa, so he went back on the lotus, and for hundreds and hundreds, according to this time reference of years, he engaged in that tapa, and that particular tapa was meditating on the names of the Supreme Lord in the form of Gayatri Mantra. Gopal Gayatri and Kam Gayatri Mantras. And then he says that he realized the fact that the Supreme Lord exists within his limbs, within his body, within his senses, within his whole being. That source, which he was looking for, existed everywhere. Later on, he gives the example, just like a seed, the relationship between a seed and a tree. The seed is the cause and the tree is the result of that cause. So there's a relationship between subtle cause and gross effect. He gives the example of wood and a fire in wood. You exist in all things, although you cannot be seen in all things, much like fire cannot be seen in the wood. There's a table. Anybody see any flames coming out of that table? But there's fire in the wood. But it's concealed, but it's there. And the fire is more subtle, but it's there. And so there's this theme of realization of the absolute oneness of all things with the Supreme, and at the same time the separateness of the Supreme, who enters into all those things. There's Lord Sringadeva. He's apart from the fire and the wood and the wood. But actually the fire in the wood and the wood have no separate existence. So he's also there and he's not there. Achintya Veda Vetattva. And that Achintya Veda, he's describing it simple way with some realization. And it's this Achintya Veda Vetattva philosophy that is the knowledge behind devotion. It's when it allows us to interact with things like in the workplace or in the marketplace or in the social place where social exchanges take place. And we can be Krishna conscious because Krishna's there, and the realization of Krishna can be manifest through the medium of devotion to Krishna. The fire in the wood comes out. The Krishna presence, even in the senses and the objects of the senses and the interaction of them, can come out. Krishna comes out through the medium of devotion, not otherwise. And the not otherwise, the default position is senses meeting sense objects without devotion. It's not realization of Krishna that comes out. It's the zing of sense gratification, which then clouds the consciousness and disturbs the whole business. So it comes up in three different clusters of verses where he's speaking about this position of the oneness of the cosmos with you.
Thank you.
My dear Lord, everyone in the material world is under the modes of material nature, being influenced by goodness, passion, and ignorance. Everyone, from the greatest personality down to the small ant, works under the influence of these modes. Therefore, everyone in this material world is influenced by your energy, the cause for which they work, the place where they work, the time when they work, the matter due to which they work, the goal of life they have considered final, and the process for obtaining this goal, all are nothing but manifestations of your energy. Indeed, since the energy and energetic are identical, all of them are but manifestations of you, the absolute oneness, feature of the Lord. O Lord, O Supreme Eternal, by expanding your plenary portion, you have created the subtle bodies of living entities through the agency of your external energy, which is agitated by time. Thus, the mind entraps the living entity in unlimited varieties of desires to be fulfilled by the Vedic directions of Karmakanda and the 16 elements. Who can get free from this entanglement? He's saying, you create this web of subtle energies that cover the soul and induce desires, and then the gross body manifestation, that is the instruments for fulfilling those desires or trying to fulfill those desires, and then the network of karma that binds one to the reactions for that activity, and it's expertly put together. Living entities have no way they can get out of it, except one thing. This is describing the process of ultimate liberation. That's he's glorifying devotional service, bhakti, the linking process. So neglect you, and one stays in this web. And thinking of you and engaging in those very same activities that one is impelled to engage in, recognizing it's temporary and illusory, but you're there. There's the temporary and illusory feature, but you are also there, and therefore I can engage, just like seeing Lord Srinadeva in the pillar. And Rani Kashyapu being unable to see the Lord in the pillar. My dear Lord, O Supreme Great, you have created this material world of 16 constituents, but you are transcendental to their material qualities. In other words, these material qualities are under your control, and you are never conquered by them. Therefore, the time element is your representation. My Lord, O Supreme, no one can conquer you. As for me, however, I am being crushed by the wheel of time. And therefore, I surrender fully unto you. Now, kindly give me protection under your lotus feet. But this is the Lord's position, material energy's position, the devotee's position, time and karma. It's the five topics of Bhagavad Gita. And we're released from karma, and we're released from the influence of matter and the modes of material nature by the shelter-taking process. One understands how this whole machinery works. There's only one intelligent thing to do. Take shelter of the Supreme Lord. not just abandon the place, but take shelter of the Supreme Lord. And then, so this thing with being crushed, it's not that as a result that material energy won't act to make the body old and diseased and die. But the entangling feature of the activities that one performs during getting old and diseased and dying don't further bind the soul. Rather, the time that is spent is further and further purifying and liberating the soul, bringing the soul to its eternal position. The time is not crushing one like it does for the materialist. Time doesn't crush one who is a devotee. This example of Hiranyakashipu having everything taken from him, as powerful as he's at the top of the pile of material toys, things, accumulations and control and power. My dear Lord, now I have complete experience concerning the worldly opulence, mystic power, longevity, and other material pleasures enjoyed by all living entities, from Lord Brahma down to the end. As powerful time, you destroy them all. Again, this is the crushing wheel of time. Therefore, because of my experience, I do not wish to possess them. My dear Lord, I request you instead to place me in touch with your pure devotee and let me serve him as a sincere servant. Now he's not, so Prahlad is not taking shelter in Lord Nrisimhadev because he's fried. Or just because he can't cope with, sometimes it's said about as a criticism of devotees, because you can't handle material life, you're just taking this imaginary, dreamlike thing. And taking up these so-called spiritual activities. But that's just your weakness and your imaginary nature. It has nothing to do with what real life is. You're just imagining something and being content in your dreamland. It's it's far more compelling to see people who are very, very successful at what they do. They're very nice, and yet they're very soft-hearted and pure in their devotion. There's a very wonderful devotee in the Chalpati temple, Krishna Chandra, Mr. Muffatlal. And he looks like, and has the, you know, has the the poise, the whole, he's a very, very successful person. Has the composure and has the whole thing. The whole, just to be in his presence, you could understand right away, here's a very successful person. And then, but it's so nice to watch him dance in arti and hear him speak with great acumen and but also great humility. And he's not a man of many words. He says succinctly, boom. It's very, very nice. It's a very special compliment to devotional service that someone is very maturely accomplished as he is and is using that in Krishna's service with a humble heart and a clear mind and pure activities. So Prahlad, my point is that Prahlad is not taking up devotional service because he's a material failure. He's the son of the most opulent person in the universe at that time. But through his experience from that position, by the grace of Narada and his pure consciousness, and Prahlad's pure consciousness as a result of that association, he has absolute realization of the uselessness of material existence, and even other processes of religiosity that may be very, very well appreciated in this world. He sees the shortcomings of them or the incomplete position of them. So again, it's exclusive shelter in devotional service. Just serving you by serving one of your loving servants. In this material world, every living entity desires some future happiness, which is exactly like a mirage in the desert. Where is water in the desert? Or in other words, where is happiness in this material world? And as for the body, what is its value? It is merely a source of various diseases. The so-called philosophers, scientists, and politicians know this very well, but nonetheless, they aspire for temporary happiness. Again, the mirage. Happiness is very difficult to obtain, but because they are unable to control their senses, they run after so-called happiness of the material world and never come to the right conclusion. Somebody in Delhi was asking, after hearing all these things, can you, you know, all these strong statements, how can we, about the futility of sense gratification, what are things that we can do to increase that realization? And just hang out with Prahlad for a while. Extolling the merciful nature of Lord Nrisimhadeva, the mercy that he's shown to him that was not even shown to anyone else, and that's by the grace of Narada. Unlike any ordinary living entity, my Lord, you do not discriminate between friends and enemies, the favorable and unfavorable, because you have no conception of higher and lower. Nonetheless, you offer your benedictions according to the level of one's service, exactly as a desired tree delivers fruits according to one's desires, and makes no distinction between the lower and the higher. So the Lord is neutral, but as the living entity approaches that neutral Lord, he reciprocates. So the picture is he's fully transcendental. And yet, the cosmic creation comes from him. He's completely aloof and transcendental from it, and yet it has no separateness from him. And he's completely untouched by the modes, by duality, by any of the contaminations, because he's the supreme pure. And when we're in this fearful condition, because we're always being buffeted around by the material energy and crushed by time, whatever we may establish gets crushed, try again, it gets crushed. It's invincible. So, taking shelter of you, that's the only cure. And trying to counteract, that's more suffering than the sufferings. It doesn't endure. I abandoned those enticements as a solution to the problems of life. Want your association only, your pure devotee keeps me in that position of bhakti, of proper regard and devotion. And your merciful nature is not due to some partiality, but it's due to how you're just reciprocating with the regard that others have for you. And so, this is the punchline. This is where we got to 28. So if part of your merciful nature is you want to give me things, please don't do that. Because those things might very well enamor me to enjoy those things, because I have this demoniac blood in my veins and I have all these disqualifications, so don't give me things. I couldn't bear the even thought of being apart from the association of Narada, association of Narada means the realm of pure devotion. Then he says something very nice. So this is 29. He says that when you came to protect me from my father who's lying over there dismembered, my realization of why you came is to uphold the word of Narada. Because your merciful protection could have come in other ways. But Narada said to my mother that Prahlad doesn't have to be born until Rani Kashyapu comes back from his austerities, and that he will not be harmed. But it was my very father who was trying to harm me, and therefore you came to uphold the word of Prahlad, of Narada. That's my understanding of why you personally came. That's the Lord's reciprocation with those who have favorable disposition to him. He upholds their word. But of course their word is nothing other than service of the Lord. My dear Lord, you alone manifest yourself as the entire cosmic manifestation, for you existed before the creation, after its annihilation, and you are the maintainer between the beginning and the end. All this is done by your external energy through actions and reactions of the three modes of material nature. Therefore, whatever exists externally and internally is you alone. Once again, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, it's you alone that exists. But this statement is actually is the first of the four nutshell verses in Bhagavad Gita. Aham Sarvasya Prabhava Matak Sarvam Pravartate. And it's one of the four Chatur Shloki verses in the Bhagavatam. Aham Evasam Evagre. In the beginning, before there was creation, I alone exist. During the period of cosmic manifestation, I alone exist. After annihilation, I alone exist. So, impersonal is like that. The devotee is like that too. Because the devotees have an understanding of realizing Krishna exists in all things personally through the expansion of his energies, and that he mercifully enters in within every atom of that energy personally. And yet he who expands his energy and expands those Paramatma expansions or Shirodakshay Vishnu expansions has his own abode, has his own relationships within that abode, and his own activities in that abode. So he's my worshipable Lord. And again, it's through the medium of bhakti, which he spent so long glorifying and elaborating upon, it's through that realm of bhakti that these things can be realized so that one doesn't get bewildered by any configuration of material existence. When there's a sudden shift, one doesn't get bewildered. One has another type of service to do, but one doesn't get bewildered. The Lord's controlling his energy, and he has some particular service he wants of me or us, and we have to take that up. But our constitutional position certainly isn't lost. For Krishna's eternal servant. From the Bhagavatam, any discussions? How does one maintain humility while objectively seeing things?
He sees that other persons, like his friends, are not at all, so he's preaching to them.
Okay.
Even like Lord Brahma or other demigods, he knows what kind of way Indra offers him.
And Narada? What's the problem? Why is there any difficulty? If he understands, if he didn't understand his constitutional position, and he didn't have the understandings that he has of what's what and who's who, then he could easily be bewildered by so many things. But having those things and having humility, why does it mean cannot see those things? That he has the transparency and the tools of knowledge combined. I don't see the problem. How does he do it? He just puts those two things together and in the mood of serving and keeps going. If one loses humility, then the tools of understanding and knowledge become blunt and useless, get in our way. It's because of his humility, they don't get in his way. They don't inflate his pride. They don't bewilder him. He doesn't use them in an abusive way, thrashing people. He's humble soul, he's not going to do that. it'll still say what's what. Fearless of the reaction, because the Lord's protection is there, he's just speaking. So you want to try again with your question? Because it's okay. In every single shloka, he's addressing him in very exalted ways. He is the object of analysis and praise and glorification in every single verse. So why do you say that? Why not? Would that not please the Lord?
He's doing that because he's thinking that that would be pleasing to the Lord.
And because it's reality. It's in his heart. It's by the grace of Narada that he's in the presence of Lord Nrisimhadev, seeing him face to face in ecstasy. As he says, how can I abandon his shelter? No. Rather, he's seeing that the way that a Vaishnav should see one spiritual master in Krishna is that Krishna, that spiritual master, is the external manifestation of Krishna. I mean, it's not Vishnu Tattva avatar, but Krishna's kindness, Krishna's mercy, Krishna's direction, wanting, the Lord's wanting to give us desire, the Lord's desire to give us direction in our life to reach him. Dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upiyanti te. The spiritual master is there. Giving that. Here's some intelligence. Please take it. Krishna. Krishna's empowering that jiva to give that gift of his, of Krishna's intelligence. Right? Power of attorney. If the attorney signs the document, it's as good as the person who gave power of attorney to the attorney to sign the document. It's as good as their signing the document. So one that may one must be very careful who one gives power of attorney to. Well, Krishna gives power of attorney to his pure devotee. He knows what he's doing. You say. Krishna says, surrender unto him. And Krishna is saying, surrender unto me. It's the same. When we worship Krishna, it's by the mercy of the spiritual master. When we worship the spiritual master, it's respecting this wonderful personality that Krishna has given. Respecting Krishna. If we're not mindful of Krishna in that circumstance, then we've got the problem. But the Prahlad doesn't have that problem. it's one of the offenses in the chanting of the holy name is to see the spiritual master in some material way that is separate Krishna. Nice, but separate. This is the question is on the theme of the number one popular question. How can the feeling of genuine feeling of devotion be there with the activities of devotion that I do? When your specific question is what can one do in that in such a circumstance of life? We have to be soft-hearted rather than hard-hearted. We have to. The way that I was addressed this when the question was asked in Delhi was not an identical way that you asked it, but the same question. It's on the same theme question. Was that Krishna Smarana gave his whole Simachalam series of lectures on the topic of becoming soft-hearted. Listen to the lectures again and apply them. But immediate practical thing is we can perform our activity. When we do the activities that we do, we should do them with the thought that it's for the pleasure of another person. Again, it's one of the three components of service attitude. Is another person should be the benefitor, should be the beneficiary of this which I am doing. So, your question was in terms of prayer and the feeling of the prayer, and I'm answering. In the little incremental day-to-day things that we do, let them be done with feeling. In a mood of serving that other person for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna. And our life is a prayer with feeling. So that a prayer becomes one of the parts of a life of devotion. So but if you just take like this example that you gave, take it and apply it to what the realization I shared that this other devotee had. They wanted to improve in their chanting. So I want to improve in my prayer so that it's with feeling and it's not happening. But so if as you keep trying and try with when another example, just to respond to your question, when Akshay was relating hearing from the Bhagavatam previously that when we are called upon to speak, the first thing we should do is fix our mind upon those persons who we have received the knowledge that we're about to speak, and that whole procedure. Actually, we do that all the time, whenever we speak. It's right there in the kirtan, in the Mangalacharna verses that we say afterwards, the Premadvani prayers. It's right there. So do we do that feelingly or mechanically? Are we mindful of what it is? And if we're mindful of what it is, it's ecstatic. This Jayarada Madhava prayer that we sing before class, generally, it's names of Krishna, and the very, very merciful nature of Krishna is, he's there, and it's in those sound vibrations. So if we chant very attentively, there we are with Krishna, in those various very intimate leelas. Kunja Bihari, there he is enjoying in the groves of Vrindavan. Gopi Jana Bhalava, Jamuna Tira Vanachari, there we are with Krishna. He's manifesting himself with those pastimes right there. But how much are we mindful? Again, it's your realization of knowledge combined with the proper feeling. Where is that feeling going to... The knowledge augments the feeling, and the feeling augments the knowledge, or the realization of that knowledge. And that's why when a pure devotee, when Prabhupada would chant, it would just move the hearts of people. And even didn't know what chanting was or anything. It's very powerful. That's what happened to me. I heard Prabhupada chant. Something happened. My life changed. I didn't know what the chanting was. Then I used to go back, in the course of the day, go back to where I was living and just put on the Krishna Meditations album, just listen to it. You know, hour after hour after hour. I didn't know exactly what it was that attracted to me. But it was changing my heart. Had some long-term effects. So, hearing the prayers of those who are situated in pure devotion. And as Prabhupada says to do, as a regular daily function, enter into the spirit of this hymn. Follow the instruction. What's the prayer saying? What's the meaning of the Tulsi prayer that we sing every morning? What are we saying? It's very, very, very lofty, isn't it? Enter into the spirit of it. Go ahead. You're invited to do so. You will find feeling there. But so that we have to give up being complacent and lazy and dull. Maybe it's appropriate at this particular, on this particular thought. I may have mentioned this before or not, I don't know. But in the course of my devotional service, I spent about a total of about a year in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico has a very similar climate to Singapore. I mentioned it? And one of the first things that I noticed, I mean, the people speak Spanish instead of whatever they speak here, but it's, the modes are very similar. And here it's much more opulent, also, as another. I mean, La Condado is the gambling place. That's very opulent. But, you know, it doesn't get a little further away from. Anyway. But the modes, just because I distributed books and preached and I got to get a sense of what people are like. And it's, life is easy. Hey, man. No. But then also, some passion and ignorance. And I saw what happened to devotees who stayed in that place and didn't stay in the fire of Krishna consciousness. They developed a similar complacency. Da 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 da. Take it easy. Mentality. I mean, just because that's the modes. If you're not in the fire of Krishna consciousness, you're in the modes. So, recognize what the modes are and don't succumb to the modes, but stay in the, say, very, very attentive to the way of devotional service. And do that, then prayers will be feelingly offered and the modes won't take over. There are some very simple visual images that I have that help me. You may notice that I say it every now and then, that somebody has their lights on. Like, hello. And if somebody's asleep, they don't respond. And somebody's bright, you know, you sense it. There are lights on. That, you know, you say something and they hear what you say and they respond according to what you say and not nothing or something else. They're alert, attentive. So we're conscious beings. And we can apply our consciousness to the path of devotion. That's attentive. Or we can, with the light out, just mindlessly carry out their activities. And the world in which we live, particularly in a place that has opulence, sense gratification readily available, beckoning and inviting, in the world of academia where there's pride and prestige and false ego to the max, be inattentive in that situation. Very situation that at the same time has some great opportunity. So be alert. So again, like this thing of fear. If I'm inattentive, it's going to be a bloody scene. Razors sharp can make a big bloody mess quick before you even realize it. So process of devotional service is compared to that, the razor's edge. I must be attentive. You get in a car and drive the car. Be inattentive. I sometimes get in cars with persons who are inattentive drivers and I want to drive. So that's on the caution side, but on the achieving, like, what the other side of something else that Prahlada is going to say, aside from being fearful, is I have no fear of this material existence. Because I have the means of your shelter. But he does so without a moment's inattention. His light's on. He's clear. At every moment. So we can achieve that by practicing it. Bring our attention to the holy name. Not just chant the holy name. That's, again, an example of external and internal devotional service. Where is our consciousness? While we're doing the form of the activity that we're supposed to be doing. Krishna consciousness. Very attentive. I think we'll end. It's quarter to eight. And certainly we can give some thought to how to carry this, the ghosty topic, further. The fruit of it. Appreciate hearing your ideas. Srila Prabhupada, he is...